because I realized that by me not saying anything to anybody and letting him get away with this, that I had left the door open for other women to be abused and harassed.
Multiple women come forward with harassment allegations against a South Peninsula hospital manager. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, May 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Lieutenant Governor Malott says the state should transition to alternative fuels sooner rather than later.
It will be a combination of the marketplace for such fuels and public policy.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
Tomorrow, Alaska's trade delegation to China is headed home. The trip, called Opportunity Alaska, puts several small, medium, and large companies selling Alaska's goods and services in front of Chinese investors and consumers. Governor Walker and State Gas Line Corporation head Keith Meyer also pushed for support for the $45 billion Alaska LNG project. Rasha McChesney from Alaska's Energy Desk traveled with the delegation and is here to talk about the results of the trip. Hi, Rasha.
Hello, Lori.
So, Rasha, you're in Shanghai right now, correct?
Yes, I am in Shanghai.
What's that like?
Well, it's beautiful. The city has a very metropolitan feel. We arrived here a few days ago, and while it is beautiful, I have to say it is full of smog. It was full of smog today. I can see it pretty well from the 58th floor of my hotel room. And several members of the delegation have said that this is really proof that China needs a cleaner fuel. It's pushing really hard for a cleaner fuel like Alaska's LNG export project.
Well, that's a great segue for my next question. Any news on that front?
Well, not really. The group did meet with Sinopec and Bank of China, and both are very large potential funders and partners of the project. But there weren't any deals signed while we were here. They're still sort of in this phase where they're figuring out if the project is feasible.
So, Rasha, what happened specifically in those meetings?
Well, it's really interesting. There's this sort of ceremony that I've seen several times on this trip. And, the governor and his aides will come in and sit on one side of the room, and whomever he's meeting and that person's aides will sit on the other side. So they sort of face off and they greet each other through interpreters, and they have these sort of long formal discussions where they introduce the various members of their entourages and they talk about the purpose of their visits. And this kind of goes on for a while. The Bank of China hosted a big reception for the delegation, and that's the state-owned bank that could help finance the $45 billion pipeline project. And Walker and the delegation also met with Sinopec. That's the giant state-owned oil and gas company that could also be a partner. And the president of Sinopec said that he looked forward to continuing to study the feasibility of the project with Alaska. And then he said this, and here's this direct quote. He said, "After some of the work we did in terms of assessment and evaluation in technology, economics, and in terms of the resources of Sinopec, I think there's a lot more work for us to be done and more than originally imagined."
That doesn't sound like a statement that would indicate they're charging forward. The governor has always been so optimistic about the gas line. Is he saying that this trip has changed that somehow?
Well, Lori, I haven't yet had a chance to talk to the governor about specifically what he thinks of those comments, but I don't think so. He and several other members of the trade delegation post that meeting said that they are very optimistic and that this is the best time for the project to get built. And, the president of Sinopec also said that he looked forward to continuing to study that feasibility. So it wasn't a hard no. It wasn't even really a soft no. It was just this discussion about how much work is going to have to be accomplished before, anybody signs a firm deal to get this project signed. And they've given themselves a hard deadline of the end of the year this year to decide if they're going to move forward with the partnership.
And apart from the gas line, Rasha, what else has been going on?
Well, there's been a lot of progress with the tourism companies that came here. China has a really rapidly growing middle class, and they're spending a lot more on tourism and outdoor tourism than they used to. And that makes Alaska a really attractive destination. So there's been this surge in the number of Chinese visitors to Alaska in recent years. So earlier in the trip, there was this memorandum of understanding that was signed with Alaska Pacific University, and they're working toward a partnership that would allow the Chinese Nordic team to train at APU and vice versa. And that would allow Alaska's team to prepare for the 2022 Winter Olympics, which China is hosting. And I haven't seen the details yet, but I'm told that a delegation from China will be in Alaska next month to look at the facilities. And they'll head up to the Alyeska Ski Resort in Girdwood as well. And so this is a big deal for both APU and Alyeska, and could lead to an influx in students and tourists.
All right. Anything else, Rasha?
No, I think we're all pretty tired. It's been a series of long days of meetings. These markets that the state is trying to penetrate are much, much bigger than anything in Alaska. And so I'm hearing from several people that they're ready to take a day or two to sleep it all off. And I am looking forward to that as well.
Okay, well, thank you for that update and safe travels home.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, Lori. See you soon.
That was Rasha McChesney with Alaska's Energy Desk. She'll be on her way back to Juneau from Shanghai tomorrow. Authorities say an Alaska tribal leader has been killed and a suspect has been charged. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports that 43-year-old Melissa Erickson, president of the Healy Lake Traditional Council, was found dead Friday night outside of the suspect's home with an axe nearby. Witnesses say Erickson and 35-year-old Sidney Randolph Huntington left a party together that night. Troopers flew to Healy Lake, a community of 13 people east of Delta Junction, the night of the party. They reported finding blood-soaked clothing in Huntington's residence. Huntington was charged Saturday with first-degree murder. Court records say he told authorities that all he remembered was drinking and blacking out. He's being held at the Fairbanks Correctional Center on $600,000 bail. Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott sees a future for renewable energy in Alaska. Malott dropped by Kodiak last week for a fundraising event and in an interview with KMXT said Alaska needs to focus on transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to more renewable resources like hydro and wind power. He said it could take a while to make that switch.
I expect that it will be a combination of the marketplace for such fuels and public policy that will drive that timing, and that has really not come into focus yet, certainly at the national level.
Malott says it's vital to the state's economy to diversify its industries and within those industries to branch out. It's the same for energy.
The imperative for Alaska is certainly one of doing its part to reduce emissions globally, but it is also an opportunity that we view economically, that investing in new forms of energy, reducing the cost of energy across our state, makes us more competitive as a state.
The lieutenant governor says Alaska needs to take steps to plan ahead. In an effort to do that, Malott is chairing the Climate Action for Alaska leadership team, which was established last year and is made up of citizen representatives from across the state. He says the group has drafted a climate change policy that's up for public review, and the governor's office is in the process of prioritizing those items and figuring out how to act on them. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how a program in Southwest Alaska is helping Yupik youth thrive.
We have several entities that come together and we talk about issues that we're having here, and then we just resolve them amongst ourselves because, you know, who knows your community better than you?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Several women have brought forth allegations against a South Peninsula Hospital department manager in Homer, describing an environment of bullying and sexual harassment. The allegations against Douglas Westfall, the former director of the hospital's rehabilitation department, also include one instance of alleged sexual assault. Complaints have also been filed with the State Division of Professional Licensing, the local union, and the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Westfall returned to work in a non-managerial role in January following an internal investigation. But as KPBI's Aaron Bolton reports, the majority of women say they want Westfall fired.
One woman who made a complaint against Westfall came forward to KPBI in February. The 8 complaints date back to the fall of 2016, most of which were made to the hospital's HR department between August of 2017 and the end of the year. Allegations range from threatening to turn on decommissioned security cameras in areas where female staff change clothes to negative comments about pregnant staff. South Peninsula Hospital spokesperson Dorotha Ferrero confirmed that there were a number of complaints.
There was an investigation based on employee concerns, and that investigation happened, and that investigation ended.
Westfall acknowledged the investigation in an email to KBBI in April, saying in part that he appreciated the severity of the allegations and was fully cooperating with the investigation. Westfall did not respond to requests to update his comments. Hospital CEO Joseph Wooden and Ferrero confirmed that Westfall was put on administrative leave before he was demoted to his current position as a physical therapist in January. The most serious allegation against the former director comes from Laura Wilkie, a former registered nurse at the hospital who left in 2011. Wilkie says she was seeing Westfall as a patient in 2009 following knee surgery. She says Westfall encouraged her to take 2 pain pills prior to an early therapy session. Wilkie says he then gave her a large pair of shorts to wear during the session before escorting her to a private treatment area.
I laid down on a gurney and he covered me with a blanket. The curtains were closed, and he proceeded to come up the leg of my shorts, reaching toward my underwear. I would say that by the time I pushed his hand away, he had his pretty much whole hand in my shorts, and his fingers were about a centimeter away from my underwear.
Wilkie says she continued her treatment with Westfall and that all subsequent sessions were performed in an open area. Wilkie explains that it was the Me Too movement that pushed her to report the alleged incident to Homer police back in October.
Because I realized that by me not saying anything to anybody and letting him get away with this, that I had left the door open for other women to be abused and harassed by Douglas Westfall.
Police declined to charge Westfall. Wilkie followed up with the hospital's HR department in November. Wilkie also filed a complaint with the State Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing against Westfall's physical and occupational therapist license in January. The division's chief investigator, Greg Francois, confirmed that Wilkie filed the complaint. He said the division has an inquiry into the matter, which precedes an official investigation. KBBI also confirmed that 2 additional complaints against Westfall were filed with the division. There are also 3 active grievances with the local union, General Teamsters 959. Union President Barbara Huff-Tuckness says none have been resolved.
We have one at the arbitration level with attempts to try to reach some sort of resolution. And we have 2 other cases that will be going toward arbitration, assuming we don't get those resolved.
Sarah Bollett, who currently works as an occupational therapist for the hospital, is one of the women who filed a union grievance. Bollett says she kept tabs on her interactions with Westfall dating back to her second day of work in April of 2015. She says Westfall made countless inappropriate comments to her during the 3 years she worked under him.
I told him I had a miscarriage and I couldn't work at the health fair, and he told me, "What were you thinking having sex without a condom?" That's when I started keeping track, because I know that you're not supposed to talk to your employees like that.
Although the hospital's internal investigation is over, hospital spokesperson Ferrero says SPH is still working with the Division of Professional Licensing. Ferrero says the hospital is also handling another complaint against Westfall with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which enforces civil rights laws involving workplace discrimination. Both Ferrero and hospital CEO Wooden say they take the women's complaints seriously. But Wooden, who started his position in March, says the hospital was surprised by the allegations.
He did have a 25-year track record of working at the hospital with no prior complaints. I can tell you that with great confidence that there wasn't concerns expressed 10 years ago.
Most of the women say the hospital's communication with them about the investigation into Westfall was poor. Ferrero says the hospital can't disclose every aspect of its investigation. She also adds that the hospital has no concerns about Westfall's professional practice and that he will continue treating patients. It's unclear when other inquiries into allegations against Westfall will conclude and what possible actions could be taken against him. With extensive reporting from Renee Gross, I'm Aaron Bolton, reporting in Homer.
The Alaska National Guard is trying to recruit more Alaska Native soldiers. Colonel Wayne Don was in Kodiak last week along with other members of the National Guard in order to reach out to locals. The National Guard says it already has an armory and 17 soldiers in Kodiak, but they're working toward a number of Alaska Native participants that are more representative of the state population. Don says about 8.5% of the entire Army Guard and 3-4% in the Air Guard is Alaska Native.
Over a period of time, since the end of the Cold War, the participation of Alaska Natives has diminished. And with that, a lot of the able-bodied young men who would otherwise provide assistance during local emergencies and state emergencies, you know, so we lack presence out in some of our communities there.
Don says the Rural Guard initiative, which they established a few years ago, is focused on bringing in Alaska Native soldiers, especially to the Army Guard.
As is going on in the rest of the country, there are entrance barriers for a lot of young men and women in terms of medical and academic or entrance scores. And so with our initiative, we're able to waive some of those initial entry requirements to increase the number of participants.
He says ideally they'd like soldiers stationed in every community, but they just don't yet have enough qualified people to serve. He says they hope to build to at least 50 members in these first few years.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Raven Alaska. Raven now provides Alaskans with the day over, a 24-hour stop in any major hub along the way to a destination, including Anchorage, Kotzebue, and Bethel. More information at ravendayover.com. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart. Protect it. This message sponsored by Alaska Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Memorial Day weekend was quieter than past years for several small towns in Southeast. Slumping king salmon numbers and a ban on sport fishing in inside waters drove Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan to cancel their annual king salmon derbies. KFSK's Alana Elder reports.
It's a subdued Friday morning at Petersburg's North Harbor. The rain in the forecast hasn't yet arrived, and the low gray clouds cast a sleepy glow over the docks. By 9, the harbor master's office is getting a little traffic, a couple of new boat owners, and the usual crowd that comes in to drink coffee and talk fish politics. Harbor officer Ed Tagabon says some in Petersburg are getting ready to spend time on the water, despite the canceled derby.
The middle harbor is totally full. The north harbor is getting close to full capacity there, so a lot of people are still going to be going out and doing some kind of fishing in the areas.
But if this were a derby year, the office would be crammed with people trying to park their boats or weigh their fish. Participants in last year's four-day event caught 200 fish total.
You know, it'd be people walking around, getting their tickets validated. You know, people getting donuts up there and going down and bait. And I'm sure the fuel dock would be totally bustling right now.
Petersburg resident Richard Carr has been fishing for 60 years. He supports the restrictions on king salmon fishing. He's actually worried they don't reach far enough.
And these fish don't always travel the same areas. So I think that everybody needs to pay when they shut these things down. Everybody needs to be shut down, not just a portion around the river.
Carr also supports a rumored consolation prize for Petersburg, if not a king salmon derby.
I think they should look into a silver salmon derby. You know, that might be something that they could substitute until the kings come back.
A silver or coho salmon derby would be held toward the end of the summer. It would mean a late season boost for local businesses like Hammer and Wecon, which supplies derby contestants with groceries, fishing licenses, bait, and gear. General Manager John Mason says he'll know in a few days how much of a difference these events usually make in terms of sales.
It won't be a huge impact to our business overall as far as annually, but we are looking at somewhere between a 70 and 90% reduction in sporting goods purchases directly related to the derby.
But like Tagabon says, people are still fishing and local businesses are still busy from that and tourism. Chamber of Commerce Administrator Mara Lutomsky says the town's seasonality has complicated plans to hold a coho salmon derby later this summer. There's just not enough people available to make it happen.
We did some advertising looking for chairmen. We called around and asked some people who we thought might be interested in doing such an event, but unfortunately we were turned down in all of those avenues, so we haven't really been able to get it up and running.
The earlier King Salmon Run fits better with the schedules of volunteers.
Coho Derby being in August or, you know, even possibly being over Labor Day weekend sounds overwhelming to somebody who might want to volunteer because they are so busy during the summer season.
Ketchikan and Wrangell will both host Coho Derbies beginning mid-August and running through Labor Day. Lutomsky says the book isn't closed on the King Salmon Derby. The committee will resurrect it in future years if the fish come back in better numbers. In Petersburg, I'm Alana Elder.
When rural Alaska makes the headlines, the focus is often on things like suicide rates, alcohol use, and trauma. But one project in Southwest Alaska shifts attention to strengths instead. Kungasvik was developed by Yupik people for Yupik people and is proving to be an effective way to help youth in parts of Southwest Alaska thrive. Ann Hillman from Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk has more.
10-year-old August Seaton sits in a small, crowded community building surrounded by little kids, teens, adults, and elders. He clutches a piece of brightly colored fleece in his hand, slowly stitching the ends together.
I'm going to sew this way, and then turn around, and then go back that way.
He's making a face mask for his mom to block the cold coastal wind when she travels through their village of Hooper Bay on a snow machine. For August, learning to sew isn't just a practical skill.
I like about it because it reminds me of my grandma. She used to like to sew all the time.
August is doing more than taking a sewing class. He's connecting with the people around him and remembering his family and his culture. He's participating in Kanuzovic, a community-driven program that uses culture to help young people feel safer and more connected with their community. The research that led to the development of Kanuzovic started in the early 1990s in response to a series of articles by the Anchorage Daily News about alcohol abuse and suicide in rural Alaska. It told the story of a people in peril, and it won the Pulitzer Prize. Kanuzovic project manager Cindy Nation says the articles only told part of the story of Alaska Native peoples.
How many times do we hear about historical trauma? You know, you people are, you know, you're all drunks, you're all this, you're all that. And we, you know, for a long time, we didn't hear about the strengths that we have.
So Yupik elders from two communities in Southwest Alaska invited researchers to help them develop interventions based on Yupik culture that would reduce the rates of suicide and substance abuse. The result was Kanuzovic, which means toolbox. Unlike other suicide and substance use prevention programs that focus on the effects of trauma and look for warning signs, Kanuzovic focuses on the strengths that have helped people thrive in the region for millennia. It's a framework developed by Yupik people for Yupik people that's adapted to each village. Every month, community leaders sit in a circle and discuss what's important to teach. It depends on the season and what's happening in the village. In late winter in Hooper Bay, the group started talking about smelt fishing and ice conditions.
It's kind of slushy. It's from the overflow. It's still there. It doesn't freeze because it's salty.
The conversation weaves together jokes about childhood games and information about gathering grasses and wood. It ends with a plan to teach young people how to make ice scoops and weave grass baskets, because that's what's useful in a coastal community when ice conditions start to change. But the program doesn't just teach hands-on skills in craft making. During each session, elders provide advice on how to succeed. As August sewed a face mask, Joseph Bell talked about safety in both English and Yupik.
When you're working with tools, any needles, you have to be aware of safety. Try not to hurt yourselves.
And Maria Bell reminded the young people that they aren't alone in this. If you have a problem, tell someone about it.
If you keep it into yourself, it's going to create something in your head, making you feel down or feel like nobody wants you. So it's always best to have somebody.
And surveys with young people show that participating in the Knezovik Project makes them feel more like they do have somebody. The young people take surveys before joining in activities and then again every 6 months. The data from the 6 participating villages, going back about 10 years, shows the Knezovik helps people feel more connected to their communities and that life has meaning. That reduces their suicide risk. The more the youth participate in activities, the more effective the program is. The published data shows that the program isn't as effective for reducing alcohol use. Joreen Joe is from Hooper Bay and directs the project in her community. She says Knezovik works because it doesn't require people to do specific activities. It presents a framework that's adapted to local needs.
It's community-driven, so we don't have people coming in, you know, telling us to do certain things, and we could just figure things out on our own as a community. We have several entities that come together, and we talk about issues that we're having here, and then we just resolve them amongst ourselves because, you know, who knows your community better than you?
She says by focusing on reasons for living and lessons from elders, the young people are learning they are much more than a people in peril. From Hooper Bay, I'm Ann Hillman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, Aaron Bolton and Renee Gross in Homer, Alana Elder in Petersburg, Ann Hillman in Hooper Bay, and Rasha McChesney in Shanghai, China. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA. The Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside Alaska. And it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 1-800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.